Okay, welcome to Azure and the Docker event. Let me actually introduce myself. My name is Doris Chen. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. With me is our senior marketing manager, Keith. So this is sort of like, I'll give you a little idea about Microsoft team on site. Anybody could answer me how many countries Microsoft has data centers all over the world? What do you guess? 30? 40? 14? Oh, that's too small. No. 35. You guys are not even close. Think more aggressively. 140. 140 is the answer. So Microsoft has data centers all over the world across 140 countries, spanning over 19 regions. Now, some people ask, how about China, mainland China? That's a big market there. Yes, Microsoft actually is the very first multinational cloud provider in mainland China. So it's available. So in case if you have some business, if you have some need, yes, it's available in mainland China as well. Okay, so really, you know, we live in a heterogeneous world, right? And our solutions probably not just restricted to some of the, say, particular applications, frameworks, or particular vertical market. You probably want a big one, right? So really, the cloud supports any kind of device from iOS, Android, and Windows, of course, right? And then basically, we provide a backend Azure mobile service. This is our backend, one of the backend service will actually allow to implement all the important things through a very easy interface. It could provide you notification, it could provide you your application state, and it could support, the most important thing is across all the devices. As a matter of fact, I help a lot of game developers, you know, implementing that so that they could support their apps on iOS, Android, and Windows. And then in case you probably want to know a little bit about it, this is called Azure Mobile Service. It's really easy to use. You could implement it in different language, JavaScript, PHP, .NET, of course, and there's a lot of things you could do with that. And then with that as a backend, it will support all the multiple devices on the front, as well as we also provide you the cross-platform solutions. For example, you could use Xamarin, or you could use things like a Cordova, PhoneGap. It's all supported and running very well, integrated very well with Azure. Azure supports both Linux and Windows Server. As a matter of fact, Microsoft loves Linux. 20% of our Azure is running Linux instances, 20%. So with the Azure virtual machine, you could actually keep your existing Windows or Linux app the way it is. You don't have to change your code. You could then deploy it onto the Azure, make it run with the virtual machine. Really, it's not just the OS. We actually support a list of the different containers, the SUSE, the Chef, Puppet, and then the Linux, and we support a full range of distribution, like Ubuntu, SUSE, OpenSUSE, and CentOS. Right, so that's actually covered pretty broad. And then in addition to that, we also support multiple data. Microsoft SQL Server, we have a lot of business on that. We support that. Oracle, IBM, MySQL, running on Azure as well. So in addition to all those big databases, we also support open source data, such as Cassandra, MongoDB, Hadoop, and Redis. All the open source, all the popular data framework, we do support it, embrace it to run it on Azure. Microsoft really care about the developers. So in addition to all the .NET support, you could actually using your favorite language of choice or favorite platform, right? Java, PHP, Node.js, Python, Ruby, and this is just a subset of that. You basically could we could support all kind of frameworks and languages there. You don't really have to say, because I'm using Azure, I have to learn another language. You could actually choose your own language, your platform, and then run it on Azure. The other thing is Microsoft actually is not trying to design a cloud to be very isolated, a mega scale kind of cloud. We actually want to compose the cloud with the other services and the clouds. For example, you could actually do a single sign-on across the public cloud from Salesforce, from Amazon, and then integrated with Azure. You could just do a single sign-on like this, and it's all supported very well. This is just one example. And then you could see we could actually provide out-of-box experience to support frameworks like Drupal, Joomla, and WebMetrix, and all those things. The idea here is you could actually run all those services you're familiar with independently. And then Microsoft actually, the Azure, embraces all those services. So whether you choose to use compute or storage or choose to just run the DB, doesn't really matter. It's your choices. It depends on what you want to do, how you want to integrate those services onto Azure. So the choice is really yours. I actually do have some programs I want to share with you. Basically, for those of you who never heard of Bitspark, Bitspark is really a program Microsoft want to help startup to be successful. The whole idea here is if you qualify, which is very easy to qualify, you could actually use all Microsoft software free for 3 years. And then if you want to try Azure, we actually give you $150 per month per developer. And then if you have up to 5 members in your team, you do the math, then you will actually have the Azure credit for $750 a month. It's good for 3 years. It's really a great program. Most startups really qualify because it's basically said less than 5 years, making less than $1 million. And then I think most startups qualify. And you probably ask, and then what happened to, what happened after 3 years, right? Well, all the software is yours free to keep. And if you choose to continue the membership, there will be detail for you. If not, that is totally fine. But obviously, you're not going to get a new software, right? But you get all the software you have in that 3 years. In addition to that, we also have something called Azure Trial Codes, because a lot of people just say, you know, I would love to try it, but I don't want to give you guys credit card. The code will actually give you $100 Azure credit. So you could use $100, or it would be good for a month, 30 days. So whichever come first, right? So basically, you could actually try that for a month or, you know, up to $100, and you could try a lot of things. Believe me, it's actually, you know, I'll give you an example. I'm actually running a few sites with my demo code, you know, and some of the game code on Azure. And so basically, I'm using some blob storage, and my monthly bill is only like less than $20. So just give you some idea. So you could actually, $100 could actually do, you could try a lot of different things. I'd like to introduce our two speakers from Docker, Jesse and Patrick. They're going to talk about building and deploying applications using Docker and Microsoft Azure. Welcome.
I'm Jesse. I work at Docker on the core team, which means that we review pull requests and fix bugs on the Docker repo itself. Last Thursday, we released Docker 1.6, and that came with a fully supported Windows client, which is pretty exciting, but there was a very long journey along the way. It was more like a quest, and we thankfully had the help of a ton of Azure engineers, actually just a few, but they were awesome and working on the weekends and just doing crazy pull requests and working around everything that we needed. It was amazing. If we rewind back to last November, that's when this all started. This was Amit from the Azure team's first pull request in reference to the client for Windows. And this started actually a long train of things that we needed to fix after it, but it was pretty cool. He had it basically working in the first pull request. There was just a few things that weren't compatible yet. So a lot of the things that we learned about our project were that it was very written for Linux/Unix. Things like file paths you would never think about because it's just //, but then there's the backslash in Windows. So there was a lot of things that needed to be changed for that. And not just in the code itself, actually the tests were a huge part of what we had to refactor in getting the client to work. There were also a lot of syscalls that we were making to Linux-y things that we needed just build tags for so they wouldn't build on Windows. So actually, if we go back to Amit's first pull request, this was him getting it to even compile on Windows in the first place, which is super hard to think about when we have syscalls in our code and things like that. when you're in a Docker terminal, if you attach the TTY to the container, then you're in like a pseudo terminal. So getting that code to work is just insane to think about when it comes to Windows, because I don't know if you guys have ever been in a command.exe, but it's not a terminal like you would expect. Control characters like control A, control E, control R for recursive search, like those don't work in the way you would expect whatsoever. So having this sort of pseudo terminal was like a crazy amount of work that the Azure team did to get it to work. Then also there was the concept of testing. How will we make sure that when someone submits a pull request to Docker that they're not breaking a small part of Windows? So we wanted to make sure that we would have regression tests, et cetera, so, and that we were testing every single PR on Windows. And actually the way the Docker client works is it's a lot like if you've ever used the Mac client. So you need a remote host. On a Mac, usually that's like Boots Docker, but you can also have like a remote host on Azure or any other cloud provider. So we actually needed two tests on every single PR. We needed a ton of servers because you can't really parallelize commands running on one. So we like scaled a bunch out, but I'll get to that in a second. Actually, even before all this, when Amit started making pull requests to fix things in our code, we had one server that was a Windows server hooked up to a remote host, and the test always would turn up red because it was broken to begin with. It didn't work. So after like months and months of working on it, he finally got to turn green. And I don't know about you, but if I had a red CI for months, I would be like super upset, but he was awesome about it. Some things that were hard when setting up the first test server, it was actually me who did it, and I am like a Linux power user. I had to flash back to my first internship of writing ASP.NET apps and try to remember like how to even use a Windows server. Like, it was hard to get consistency across the Windows hosts because, I mean, I'm used to scripting everything out, but I like didn't know another way to do it than without like bringing up IE and downloading what I needed. Also, Jenkins would also disconnect a lot, which we found out was like a Jenkins bug, and it could be fixed by a command line flag on start, which is super crazy. Like just these random things that you would never think about, you like uncover. Also, yeah, I have no idea about setting up Windows servers. Like I used to know some back in the day, but that was a long time ago. Like even setting environment variables globally was like an unknown concept to me, which on Linux I could do in like a second, but you know, it's like an unknown territory. Also, we wanted to set up the Jenkins service as a Windows service, which I know how to do that in like Upstart or in systemd, but that's like unknown concept to me when it comes to Windows. So getting through all that, and like the Windows server would just restart sometimes because it had updates. So I guess that's a setting that you can change, and I changed it. Which was great. Then we got down to a science and everything was good. We started spinning up a bunch of them so that we could test all the PRs. And now we actually have 9 hosts, which actually each one of these is a Windows server on Azure and then also tied up to the remote Linux host. So each of these like little icons is really 2 servers running. So that's 18 for 9 of them. It's a little crazy. So yeah, every PR on Docker now gets tested against Windows, so it's great. We don't have to worry about things getting broken or anything like that. So now what I was going to do is show some cool stuff that you can do with the Docker client. Okay, so like I mentioned earlier, a huge like hurdle that we had to leap over was this like concept of a terminal and like a TTY and having control characters and having colors and stuff like that. So if you look at the code for this, it's actually like crazy. And they're working on rewriting it even as we speak. So it's a little funny, but I'll just show that like if you ls in a directory, you get cool stuff. So let's see. So I'll just do Docker. Actually, I can even. Info. So we have this remote host. It's Ubuntu running AUFS. Sorry, let me just resize this. I didn't think it was going to. Also, just even what I'm doing right now, I had no idea how to do before. Like, resize the command.exe. Okay, so there we go. Docker version, this is going to be 1.6.0 on the host and client side. So then we'll do a Docker run. And we're passing the flags interactive and TTY. And I'll just do like a basic Ubuntu 14.10. And our entry point will be bash. So if we like ls in this directory that we're just in, there's colors like that. I mean, it seems very simple when you're just looking at it like this, but it's very complex on the other side. Even if I have like thing, like I'm here at the end, and if I do what I would normally think would work as control A, I'm now at the start. And then if I do control E, I'm now at the end. Like these small things, like you take them for granted, but it's like a huge deal. Control C, even control R, and like, I mean, technically I had nothing in my bash history, but you know, it would work. So yeah, control characters were super intense to get working. So I'll just pop out of here. Then there's also some other cool things that you can do. Like every time that I tested these PRs, I would do these like little things with the control characters and the colors. But the fun ones are, if we look at what images I have here, I have this like JP2A, which will convert a URL like image to ANSI art. So let me just, and this is all in command.exe. I don't know. I think that that's just like mind blowing. I put the Docker logo up on this thing, so hopefully it's still there. And there it is, in command.exe. I don't know, this just like blows my mind. It's so cool. So I mean, that's just using a Linux program that converts like a JPEG to ANSI art. But it's so cool. Actually, that Docker image was also written by Mariana Tessel, who is our like VP of engineering. She's awesome. But yeah. Fun fact on that one. Okay, so then also what is really cool, I'm not in command.exe anymore though, like I'm in the conemu one because this doesn't really work there yet, but Amit's content on like making it happen, but it would still be cool. So if I run this, then we have the Nyan cat in your terminal on Windows. I don't know, I think that's super cool. but yeah, so it works just like if you've ever used the Mac client. And before, if you were using Boot to Docker on Windows, you can now hook up it. The Windows installer now works where if you have the client, you can run it natively from command.exe to hook up to that remote host, which is super great. But yeah, so that was basically what I had. And we're really grateful for all the help from Azure in getting this to work, because we would have been lost without them.
So hi everybody, my name is Patrick Chenezon. So I work for Docker. I joined Docker only 5 weeks ago. I'm actually an ex-Microsoft guy. I spent 2 years at Microsoft, and the last 6 months there were spent trying to move the Docker ecosystem that I'm going to tell you about, like all the orchestration engines, the plugins and all that, to Azure and making sure it works well on Azure. The thing that struck me after starting to use it more than a year ago is that when I started using it for my development, It felt a little bit like what the Netscape Navigator in 95 felt like. This is a new way to develop applications, and it grows on you as you use it. And you start, like the example that Jesse showed today, you start using it for a bunch of stuff, some of them fun and some of them are really for work. So first I want to talk about Docker in the cloud market. How is it positioned over there? And that's actually a slide that I used to show to my colleagues at Microsoft to explain them what I thought the cloud market looked like, with an analogy with movies. So on the left side, you have the private cloud with VMware. So they're ruling the private cloud market, which is shrinking right now. And to me, the movie is 300. You know, it's like they're shouting Sparta, but we all know how it ends up at the end. Google, and Google, I felt like this guy here. It's like Back to the Future. You know, this guy from the 80s, he goes back in time in the 50s, he starts playing guitar, like really hard rock, and then people are baffled from this music from the future because they don't understand it. And that's really how I felt when I was presenting Google App Engine to enterprises, saying, this is where you will be with platform as a service in 10 years. You should adopt it today. And they told me, you just go back to your Googleplex. Amazon Web Services, to me, they're like Pacific Rim. You know, these big extraterrestrial monsters that are coming out of the Pacific Ocean to invade the enterprise market. They're doing pretty well right now. But what we see here is that on the left, you have VMware in the private cloud, Google and Amazon really trying to get in the enterprise, but public cloud only. And in the middle, there's Microsoft. And Microsoft always had a hybrid strategy with Azure Pack and System Center inside the firewall, where you can build your own private cloud. And then you're using the same tools to manage your Azure on the public cloud with lots of data centers and all that. What I found really interesting in the past 2 years is really the rise of Docker. Personally, I didn't see it coming at all. I thought, hey, Amazon 2006 infrastructure as a service, that was kind of settled. Then with platform as a service, we had the right, I thought we had the right abstraction layer for developers. But I still heard lots of developers for Google App Engine and Cloud Foundry saying, hey, I got all these limitations when I use your platform as a service. I really want to use this Linux executable in there, or maybe this language that you don't support yet in there, or there's no build pack for it. And there was a lack of flexibility in there that gave us the ability to like manage your application and scale it for you. And what Docker achieved is to create this new layer in the market that's between infrastructure and platform, and that's kind of reorganizing, the whole market is reorganizing around it right now. And that's what we're going to talk about with Docker orchestration. It's the equivalent of shipping containers for your apps. It gives you portability. Why is it successful now? To me, there's like four factors that are coming together. Cloud adoption in enterprises. The need for portability, enterprises don't want to get locked again like they did with Microsoft 20 years ago. So they really want portability when they pick their cloud provider. And Microsoft actually understands that, and they're playing their cards really right there. They want hybrid. Again, Microsoft has the right strategy there. And there's the after Agile has been settled and starts to settle in the enterprise, there's this new movement called DevOps where Dev and Ops are working together. And you'll see, I think Docker is really at the heart of DevOps. When you think about Docker, it's not only what the company is producing, it's also a whole ecosystem. There are lots of people building stuff around it. And that's kind of a summary of what the ecosystem looked like. What you see at the bottom is the equivalent of the new hardware. This is the cloud where your code is running. So you have VMware for virtualization inside the firewall, and they have this thing called vCloud Air, where you're supposed to get some virtual machines in the cloud. Giant, it's really great. They're the ex-Solaris guys, and they build this whole cloud on Solaris, and they have Docker running, fronting it right now. Microsoft, Amazon, and Google are the big three there, and each of them have a different strategy. So this is kind of the hardware layer. On top of it, you have the operating system. And what became really interesting that in the last year, all the main operating systems just focused on Docker. They reorganized themselves to just be a better place to run Docker containers. And so it started with CoreOS, who built this minimal distribution that's inspired from the ones that Google is running its data centers on, because Google is running all their stuff in containers. And essentially, the idea that you remove everything that was in a Linux distro, you just keep the kernel, a few services, and then the Docker daemon, and you run all your code in user land in Docker containers. So CoreOS started that. After that, Red Hat followed with Project Atomic, which is a smaller distribution of Red Hat focused on Docker containers. Ubuntu came with Ubuntu Core. One of the most interesting one to me is Rancher OS. It's a really minimal distribution, and they went even further where even their systems daemons are running in containers. So they have two Docker daemon running, one for userland and one for systems, which are running in Docker privilege containers. And they're putting out lots of great stuff that are very Docker-centric. So I highly advise you to take a look at that. And then yesterday, even VMware released their own Linux distribution called Photon that's focused on containers with Docker and Rocket as well. So that's kind of the operating system layer. Then you have Docker itself, which is the engine, and then Compose and Swarm, and we have a Docker machine. We have several projects out there. And then we have add-ons on the left here. You see Flocker, so that's the icon there. Flocker, they let you build stateful containers and move them around in the data center. Weave Networks is about network virtualization. And on the right is where the big fight is. So the fight this year, I would say, is all about Docker orchestration. And here is just a sample of the players in there. I think I listed the most important ones. So the first one is Swarm. So at Docker, we have our own project for Docker orchestration called Swarm. Very simple to use. Then we have Mesos, which is coming from Twitter and is used in production in lots of different environments. Kubernetes is an open source project coming from Google, but that's running also on Azure and on Amazon. And then Deis, which is a Heroku-inspired platform as a service, open source, running on top of CoreOS and leveraging Docker. So a lot of players in there, and when you're starting to, as a developer, when you start with Docker, you start on your laptop, but very quickly you want to deploy that to cloud instances. And very quickly after that, you go talk to your ops people and you tell them, how do I deploy that? And then they tell you, okay, what are we going to use for orchestration? And there's a lot of action and innovation in that space. And the goal of this talk is to kind of give you an idea of all the players in there, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and also show you a few of them who are running pretty well on Azure. So Docker is based on features in the Linux kernel, namespaces, and C groups that provide you isolation. If you're a developer in a specific language, we have a bunch of language stacks. So when you run your application, you specify an image from which on which you are going to base the image for your application. And so there are images for Java, Python, and Go, and a bunch of other languages out there. So there's a big community around Docker. It's an open source project as well as a company. And it's all about DevOps. To me, Docker is, with a container, it's really the entity that is between dev and ops. So devs are creating containers, ops are running them and orchestrating them and making sure that they run correctly. And so the workflow is very neatly defined there. Now let's talk about Docker on Microsoft. One of the little known facts about Satya Nadella, who's the new CEO of Microsoft, Satya is an ex-Sun guy as well. And recently he came on stage and he said, hey, Microsoft loves Linux. When you compare that to the previous statements of the previous CEO about what Linux represented, that's a big change of heart. And that's a big heart there. When I was at Microsoft, I spent most of my time engaging with the Docker ecosystem. So here, doing a hackfest with the guys from Tutum to bring them on Azure, or bringing Deis on Azure as well. So one of the big announcements that came out of Microsoft is that they love the Docker workflow for developers so much that they're going to port Docker to Windows Server, which means they're going to implement the same kind of primitives of isolation that exist in the Linux kernel in Windows. And then they're going to build the Docker engine for Windows applications. So you'll be able to do Linux containers for your Linux applications, Windows containers for your Windows application, and then use the same Docker client to just run and orchestrate them. So Microsoft made lots of announcements in the past few months. So there's lots of action in this space. I had to edit these slides like this morning because of the announcement from yesterday or 2 days ago. So the first announcement is Docker on Windows Server. The first announcement was Docker client on Windows. So that's what Jesse showed. Ahmed Balkan just worked a lot on that with the rest of the team. And Docker client is part of the 1.6 release. So if you're a Windows developer and you're working on a Windows laptop, you can use Docker today, even with all the fancy terminal escape sequence and controls. Then the second part, which is super important, is that the Docker engine is going to run on Windows to provide you an ability to deploy Docker containers for Windows applications coded in .NET, running on Windows, but deploying on Windows. And it's all about having better density for your workloads on the server, as well as having like that unit of orchestration, which is the container, to deal with for orchestrating all your microservices that you're building your app with. Last week there was another announcement, or 2 weeks ago, which is more options on Windows for Docker containers. So one of them is called Nano Server, in the same way that all the Linux operating systems are shrinking to put all the workloads in Docker containers. In the same way, Windows will have a smaller version of Windows Server that will be focused on running containers. And then Hyper-V containers. Hyper-V is the virtualization technology from Microsoft, and it provides virtual machine level isolation for your containers. So that was announced 0408, which is like 2 weeks ago. And then yesterday, or 2 days ago, Mark Rusinovich did this post where he pre-announced Azure Fabric, where there will be more details about what Azure Fabric is at build. Azure Fabric is kind of taking some of the orchestration components that are used at Microsoft to run services like Bing or Halo, and put them into a platform, a composable platform for orchestrating things like containers. And there are lots of other aspects as well to it. Now let's talk about what you can do today, Docker on Azure. If you want to get started, it's very easy. If you don't like the terminal, you can go in the portal. So the new Azure portal, there's an image called Docker on Ubuntu Server. You just go in there, you find that image, you just upload your SSH keys or you specify your password, and within 5 minutes, you'll have a Docker instance running on Azure, and you can SSH to it, or you can do a Docker minus H with the URL for it. And start issuing Docker commands to it and deploy your containers over there. So there's another way, which is using PowerShell, but personally I never got to learn PowerShell. Even at Microsoft I was using a Mac. So when you're on Mac or Linux, in order to interact with Azure, there's this Azure cross-platform client, which is based on Node.js, that lets you issue commands to Azure. Through what is called the Service Management API that lets you list your VMs, create cloud services, endpoints, and things like that. So that's what the command looks like. So it's the Azure VM create command. They added Docker in there. So that's to tell you how Docker is important. They get between VM and create. So that kind of tells you something. Then you specify a bunch of a bunch of parameters like your subscription ID. You want SSH. You specify your cert. Here you can see that I'm using the same cert for SSHing into my machine as I'm using to manage my Azure subscription. If you're an ops, you would cringe at this, but I'm a developer, so I don't care. I don't want a password because I'm a developer, but I still don't want a password. I'm going to create that machine in East US region. I'm going to give it a really fancy name with a date because I create so many VMs that very often my name that are taken. I can specify an Ubuntu image name, and then the user is Ubuntu. So let's try that. So let's go into a terminal window. So that's my Azure Docker VM Docker create. So here we're 420. Let's say we're 422 because I provisioned that VM like 5 minutes ago. So I'm just going to launch that. And so the behind the scene when I'm launching that. Oh no! I had my DS. Okay. So behind the scene, what the Node.js client is doing is that it's calling the REST API for the Azure Service Management API, which is all documented on the Azure website, and it's telling Azure, hey, I want to create that VM over there, but I want it to be a Docker VM, which means that it's going to, once the VM is provisioned and the SSH certs are in there, it's going to use an agent. So there's an agent called WAA agent in every Azure Linux VMs. And this agent is going to just install Docker, the Docker daemon, configure it with certificates that are on your machine here. So it's doing all that work. While it's doing that, I'm going to continue talking. So that's the Azure native way of doing that. There's another way, which is called Docker Machine. And Docker Machine is like, it's better than sliced bread. When you start using Docker, it will be your favorite friend. It's a little tool that lets you provision Docker engines anywhere in any cloud. So it has a bunch of drivers. So you specify, so you say Docker Machine create -d a name of a driver. So here I'm using Azure, but there are drivers for Amazon, for Google, for VirtualBox on your local machine, for VMware, Hyper-V, whatever technology you're using, there's a good chance that there's a driver for it. After that, you have a bunch of driver-specific parameters. For example, for Azure, I still need my subscription. I'm going to tell it in which location I want my VM to be, the size of it, and all that. And then I give it a name. And then what this guy is going to do, and I'm just going to do that there. Okay, so that's my Docker Machine command. Let's create that on the pad Docker Machine 21. So you can see that my Azure VM was created there. I'll just wait a little bit and I'll just launch this guy. So what this guy is going to do is generate some certs locally, put some metadata into my my $home /.docker /machines directory. So there's a bunch of metadata and certificates that will let me log into that machine and also authenticate with my Docker daemon, as well as SSHing in there. We'll let it run and then I'll show you how you use it. So now, you know how to provision a VM in Azure that has the Docker daemon pre-installed and that you can start using with Docker. Now let's talk a little bit about the ecosystem. There are two pieces in the ecosystem. There are people who are complementing Docker and added functionality to it, like Weave, which is doing virtual networking. So what Weave is doing is that When you're launching a container, it just assigns an IP address, like the daemon is going to assign an IP address to it. What Weave lets you do is that it lets you manage a fleet of containers across different clouds with a unified networking control plane. So you can say this guy will have this IP address, this guy will have this one, and it's a networking overlay with a DNS system so you can assign names to it. And then your applications can use these names and you can use that in your configuration management. It's very useful, for example, I've used it to install Kubernetes on Azure because Kubernetes needs to assign a unique IP address to each pod. And so the pods are running on the same machine and machines on Azure have only a single IP address. On Google, they give you a whole /8, I think, or /16 subnet. On Azure, you need Weave to have that, to assign a whole subnet to a machine. And then each pod can have one IP address in that subnet. Flockr is an interesting player where one of the aspects of Docker is that when you run a container, you can attach a volume to it, which is usually attached to your host where the engine is running. If you're running in an orchestration environment where the orchestrator can take your container at one point and say, oh, I'm going to move you there. If the container is the MySQL database with all its data assigned to a volume on the local host, there needs to be a piece of software that moves it. And that's what Flockr is doing. One of the interesting facts about Flockr is that it's based on ZFS, which is the file system from Solaris, that has a very fast snapshotting capabilities. And the way they're doing that is that when the orchestrator says, move from this to this machine, it lets the application continue to run, takes a snapshot of the file system, of the volume, starts moving the snapshot to the other host, and that can take hours. Once that's done, it stops the container. It stops the container that's using the volume, then takes the diff of the snapshot, moves that diff that should be much faster, and then they restart the container on the other side with the same volume. So right now, Docker doesn't have plugins, and so both Weave and Flockr, the way they were working is that they were wrapping the Docker command, which is very bad. You want to use the Docker command directly. And so what they ended up doing is that they have a way of prototyping plugin where they intercept the API calls from the Docker API. And then when the Docker client talks to the server, they intercept the calls. They do their work. They have the server wait for it. So for example, they're moving a volume from one host to another. And then they enrich the call with their data. And then they pass the call to the Docker server. And they do the same thing on the other side. And right now, we're working with these ecosystem partners to build a plugin architecture for Docker. So now let's talk about orchestration. And I'll start with Swarm, which is the native orchestration engine from Docker. One of the advantages of Swarm is that it's very simple to set up, and it has very very easy premises. It's very easy to get started with it, and it's pretty powerful behind the scenes. So when you're using Docker without a clustering solution or without an orchestration solution, you have a bunch of clients who are talking to one server, and that's all there is. For microservice-based applications, very often there's hundreds or maybe thousands of microservices running. They need to run on different machines, so you need a solution for that. And so what Docker Swarm is doing is that it's fronting all these engines, and it talks the same API as the Docker API. So your Docker client is talking to the Swarm master, and the Swarm master then says, oh, there's room on that server over there, on that engine over there. I'm going to, the container you want to deploy, I'm going to deploy it over there or over there. And so that's Swarm in a nutshell. It's doing resource management, pretty advanced scheduling with things like constraints and affinities. For discovery of the cluster, it has pluggable backends, and it's very secure. It's using a TLS for encryption and authentication. So that's what Swarm looks like. You just you use Swarm create to create a swarm, and that will give you a token. And then you use that token for a node to join the cluster. You just do a swarm join with a node IP address and the token URL. And then for the Swarm master, you just use Swarm manage on that node, giving it the address for the IP address and the token. And by default, it's using the Docker Hub service with that token to just list all the IP addresses that the different engines need to talk together. So resource management, you can run stuff like that. With constraints, you can say, oh, I want to run this container, but only on operating system that are Red Hat or on machines that have a storage driver AUFS, or only in region east, or maybe on a specific host. You have affinities as well, where you can say, I want these two containers to be together, or I want these two containers to be on separate hosts, like my front end and my database. And recently, they added something called soft affinities and constraints. Mesos is kind of it's another. They call that the data center operating system. It's another orchestration engine beyond Docker. It's orchestrating a bunch of stuff like Hadoop clusters. It's used in production in many places. It comes from Twitter originally. There's a whole ecosystem around it. And they have this notion of framework, which is a scheduler plus an executor. What you need to remember is that Mesos is working pretty closely with Docker to integrate with Swarm right now. So there's a whole presentation about that. CoreOS, it's a minimal Linux distro that's just designed to run Docker containers. So they have something called etcd, which is a kind of a key value database where you can store configuration for your services and that you can use for service discovery. And it's using a gossip protocol to replicate on all the nodes of your cluster. And on top of that, they have built a very lightweight orchestration engine called Fleet that lets you orchestrate your Docker containers. They also recently made an agreement with Google where they have a distribution of CoreOS that comes with Kubernetes. So they're kind of the answer for Google to the hybrid cloud conundrum therein, which is you can run Google Container Engine, which has the same primitives as Kubernetes, and then so in the cloud, and then on premise you would run CoreOS with Kubernetes. So that's kind of CoreOS. I have a whole tutorial about this on this GitHub account about how to provision CoreOS clusters on Azure. And I even wrote a Python script to do that. DES is an interesting play where they're kind of a platform as a service, and they try to imitate the kind of development workflow that you would have with Heroku, where you write your code using a build pack, and then you do a Git push to a Git server that's on the Heroku side, so here on the DES side, and then it's going to build your code and run it, and then you can scale it from there. They added support for containers, either images or containers, and it's a pretty nice way to have an open source pass. It's running on top of CoreOS, and on my GitHub repo, the same thing. I have a whole tutorial about how to set up a DES cluster on Azure. So that's very often for startups. That's one of the things they want. They want to say, "Hey, I'm okay coming on Azure." But I want something like Heroku. So DES is the answer for that. Then you have, I'll just skip that. And DES is doing the load balancing for you and all that. I'll just show you a demo. Kubernetes, that's the orchestration engine from Google. It has many more concepts. It's a little bit more complicated. So in addition to what is in Docker, they have, in addition to the notion of container, they have this notion of pod where you group containers together and that's the unit of orchestration. So you're going to move these pods around and each of them has a specific IP address. They also have this notion of labels and services which are used for load balancing. So it's a pretty sophisticated environment. It's quite, I would say, at least on Google Compute Engine, it's really designed for it, and it's really easy to set up there. I tried to set it up on Azure, on Amazon. So I spent a month trying to set it up on Azure. Now I think the script works. But for example, even on Amazon, you could set up a Kubernetes cluster. But if you rebooted one of the machines, it just wouldn't work anymore. So you can feel that, the paint is not fresh on that project yet. But it's evolving pretty fast, and there's lots of action in there. So it's running today on Google, on Amazon, and on Azure, and there are documentation on the Kubernetes project about this. And then there's Cloud Foundry. So Cloud Foundry is this platform as a service. It has lots of components. But what you can see in there, the Garden Linux and Garden, these are containers. And Cloud Foundry, which was a kind of big monolithic pass where you had to take everything, they're trying to reinvent themselves as a Docker or at least as a container orchestration engine with a new project called Diego and another project called Lattice. So that's something to take a look at. And IBM, they have this platform called Bluemix, which is based on Cloud Foundry, as well as OpenStack and Docker. Okay, just a few things to take a look at as well. Giant is pretty interesting. They have this offering called Triton, where you just talk to the Giant data center, which is a Docker engine, and it's a little bit like Swarm. They would just distribute your containers, and it's transparent for you. Clever Cloud, it's a French company that's doing Docker. Rancher OS, I talked about it. So that's kind of a summary of Docker orchestration. Docker Swarm is a Docker native orchestration platform. It's very simple to set up and very simple to use. That's very much in the Docker style. Mesos is a more heavyweight to install, but it's used in production in lots of places. CoreOS with Fleet, I think they're moving more toward Kubernetes. Kubernetes is pretty heavy duty. Deis is a Heroku style, and Cloud Foundry Diego. So that's kind of all for the slides. I just wanted to show you a little bit of what you can do with this stuff. So now that I created, you can see my Docker machine has been created. So now I can say eval Docker machine like that string there. If I do that, and actually let me show you what the command outputs, because Docker has a bunch of it's using either environment variables or command line parameters. And so what Docker machine does for you is that it manages all these environment variables to say, where are my certificates to log in? What's the port? What's the IP address? And here you can see what that looks like. So here, when I do that eval, it's just setting in my environment that I want to use TLS verify. The cert is over there, and the Docker host is at this path docker-machine.cloud.net at that specific port. So when I've done that, I can do a Docker info. And here you can see that I have, it's an Ubuntu Linux. It should be Docker, where is the version in there? I don't even see it. The client is 1.6. So it gives me a bunch of information about the and then when I do a Docker PS, I don't have any images running yet. So if I want to schedule a container, there's one app that I really like that I that my friends at Spring, so it's a Java framework. They built this sample app that's a Spring Boot application that's microservice based, where you don't need an app server to run it. You just do Java minus jar with the jar that it creates for you. And then it relies on MongoDB for the file system. So it's like Spring on MongoDB. So I have a MongoLabs MongoDB hosted instance in Azure. And let me, and so I can deploy it here in that, on that instance. So so that's the more complicated stuff. So that's DS. Yeah, that's so that's it. So the app, the container, let me show you that in bigger. So the container is called Chenaison Spring Doge. And so when you want to look for images, typically you're going to look into the Docker Hub. Okay, so when you're getting started with Docker, very quickly you want to create your own images, and then you can use the Docker Hub for that. Okay, so I just go to Docker Hub. I log in. I hope he remembers my credentials, because I don't. Okay, seems that it does. And here you can see that I have a bunch of repositories. I'm also part of an organization, PAT.org, that you all can join, because we manage also organizations and different developers that lets you organize your images and you can share them. So Docker Hub is free, but we have a paid-for service where you can buy private repositories to work with your colleagues. If you're an enterprise, we also have an offering called Docker Hub Enterprise. It's not completely out yet, but it will be soon, where you can buy Docker Hub for behind the firewall to set it up for all the developers in your company. And here you can see all the containers I have created. So this one is called Spring Doge, and when I go in there, so I see some details about what it's doing, and there's a bunch of tags about it, and it's been downloaded 193 times, so that gives you an indication of how many times I do that demo, because I don't think many people are using that stuff. So it's a very simple app. In order to run it, I'm just going, so I do a Docker run minus D, which means I'm going to start the application in daemon mode. It's going to stay up there. Minus E is to pass environment variable. I don't know if you've read the 12 apps, the 12 factor document from Heroku. It's a style of building apps as microservices. And typically you don't hard code the configuration, you pass it as environment variable at runtime. So here I pass the MongoDB URI, and this one is going to a MongoLabs instance that I have on Azure. Then minus P is the port mapping. So here I'm going to map the 8080 port from the host where I'm going to deploy it, so the host on Azure. I'm going to map that to 8080 internally inside of the container where my application is going to run. And so if you look at the Docker file for this, I don't know if I have time to show you that, but in the Docker file I say expose the port 8080, and then the name of the container. So let's do that. Okay, so what it's doing is that it's talking to my Docker machine that's in Azure. I hope I remember how it's called. And then it's going to deploy that container on that Docker machine, and it's going to start, so there's a bunch of downloads, so the download is happening on the server side, is downloading all the layers that my Spring Boot app is made of. I think it's based on the Java base image. And then when it will be finished, it will just start the application. Once I'm done with that, there's a quirk in Azure where, contrarily to Amazon, so let me show you the, so that's the old Azure portal. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I prefer the old one to the new fancy one, where I always get lost. So here I can go to cloud services, and when I go to the cloud services, I should see my. Actually, how did I call it? Maybe it was Pat. Let me see. Let me go up there to see what I did. So it was a Pat Docker machine 0421. Maybe you're right. Yeah, I know 421. It's here. So it created a cloud service. So the cloud service is the outside point where the load balancer is. And inside a cloud service, typically you can have like 20 virtual machines in there. In there, Docker machine just creates one, which is my pad docker 01. And there are endpoints. And the endpoints let me do a mapping from the outside cloud service, which has an externally addressable URL, to internally on that VM. And I can do a port mapping in there. So what I'm going to do in that case is I'm going to map port 80 on the outside to the port 8080 where my Docker container is going to run. And let me see if this guy is finished. No, he's still pulling layers. Actually, I'm going to do that on the command line. So you can do that on the UI or on the command line. I prefer letting him finish while... Okay, so he finished downloading the Padspring Doge image. Maybe I'll just open a new terminal. Oh no, he's done. So then I'm going to do an Azure VM endpoint create on that cloud service. So it's a pad docker machine 0421. And I'm going to map 80 to 8080. So then it's going to go into my VM and create that endpoint at the cloud service layer to say, when you're going to the URL paddockermachine.cloudapp.net on port 80, please go to that please go to that VM on port 8080. And then there's a second mapping where at the VM level, the Docker engine has made a mapping between 8080 internally and the container in there. And then if everything works, if I go there, hopefully cloudapp.net. When it's finished deploying, oh, here you go. So that's my application. So there I can go on. It's a really fancy application. So let me see what I have in there in my desktop. Yeah, so Docker San Francisco. I'm just going to take the logo here. And what this app is doing is that it's doing image manipulation to add a bunch of bogus things to that image that my friend Josh likes a lot. And actually you could go to that application right now and just drag and drop images. And there's a nice, let me show you that. There's a nice monitoring page where in real time it's just going to show me all the stuff that people have uploaded. So let's upload a second one. The Docker Seattle that's happening tomorrow. And you can see it's appearing like that. And so that's kind of a simple application. And the back end again is that MongoDB database that is hosted in the in Azure, in MongoLabs, and that I can take a look at in there where I have all my objects and IDs. So that's kind of that's one of the demos. I just wanted to show you a quick demo of Swarm, of Docker Compose and Swarm. So Docker Machine is one of the important aspects of orchestrating Docker containers, so you can provision engines. Then with Swarm, you can assemble them into a cluster, and I've done that for you already. So I have a cluster running out there. And then we have another tool that's called Docker Compose. And what Docker Compose lets you do, let me see if I have it. Yeah, Compose for Swarm, I have it in there. So what Docker Compose lets you do, this one is targeting my local boot to Docker. So one of the classic issues of developers when they start using containers is, oh, I have to do Docker this and Docker that, and maybe there's Redis for caching, MySQL for the database, and an app server, and maybe an API server, and I need all these to start, for me to start developing. And that's really painful to launch all these four commands. So compose lets you explain or lets you specify in a declarative format the various containers that you want to run together. So here, for example, I have a front end that's my web front end. The image for it, so this one is a simple image called web for compose swarm. And it's a Python application, so I can specify the command. So there are some parameters that I put in my Docker file. Some of them, I put them in my compose file. And I can say, oh, I want to open that on port 5000. And I want to create a link to that other container that has the Redis caching server. And then I have a second container I want to start, which is with the Redis image. And then when a developer joins your project, you just give it access to your GitHub URL. It just does a git clone of your code base. There's a compose file at the base of it. And all they need to do, before that, developers had to read long readmes to install a bunch of stuff. Now they just need to do Docker compose up. And what Docker Compose is going to do is going to talk to my local, here it's my local Docker engine, and it's going to say, oh, I'm provisioning for you a new container with a web front end and a container with Redis, and please link them together and open port 5000 on that. So for development, it's a very good experience. And one of the things I wanted to show is that now it's integrated with Swarm as well. So the integration is still in the works. There are stuff that works, stuff that don't work. But for example, you could take that file and deploy that to a Swarm, which has like many, many different engines behind it for maybe a test server, or maybe going QA, and eventually having another swarm that's for production. So I don't know what compose, it's taking a while to start up. Before it starts up, or while it's starting up, I want, it's barfing on me. Don't do that to me, compose. Let's try it again. And while it's doing that, I wanted to show you one last piece of the puzzle. And that echoes a remark I had from many of my Microsoft colleagues when I gave them the first course, half-day course on Docker. I went to the terminal command line and started provisioning clusters. And after half an hour, one of them told me, hey, there's no UI for that. Are you obliged to go in the terminal? At that time, that was true. Now there's a UI for Docker, which is called it's called Kitematic. And it looks something like this. Yeah, so in Kitematic, it's an application that you can download. It installs everything for you, like a boot to Docker itself. And then you can say, oh, I want to create a container. So let's say my Chenaison Spring Doge. Oh, it's here. So it's doing the search in the hub for me. And then I can tell it, hey, I want to just create that container. So it's connecting to the Docker Hub, downloading the image. Actually, here I have downloaded it already. So it should be able to start it for me. And you can see, and here I can see the logs. So I can say, oh, view the logs. I don't need to go to issue some commands and all that. I see my Spring application starting. It's going to barf because I haven't given it the configuration. Then how do I do that? I just go to settings. And I say, oh, I want to set some environment variables. And let's go back there. The environment variable I want is Mongo URI. And the URI is this. So it's the one that's hosted in Azure over there. So I just set that here. I save that. I can do some port mapping in there if I want. I can create some volumes. I can even open a terminal from there. So many people are just using that to just get the right terminal all configured with what's right. And then I can say restart. So I'm going to restart this container, Spring Doge 2. So you can see it restarting. And when it's done, I can tell it, hey, I want to I want to view it in the browser. And so here, it opened a port for me. It has the right IP address, so I just need to wait for it to be started. But here, I should see the app appearing. Actually, that's another that I started before.
In order to use that, do you have to download both of them, the Ubuntu? Can you just use that GUI front end? What's the deal on that?
Yeah, so the question is, are you obliged to install Docker, Docker Compose, and all that, or can you just download Kitematic?
Suppose I want to use this GUI, now what? Do I have to start all over?
No, you don't need to start all over. If you want to use the GUI, you just download Kitematic. There's a nice installer for Mac, installs everything. You just start it, and boom, you're...
It just puts a GUI on the front end that I already have.
No, actually, I think it comes... I'm not sure. I think it has its own Ubuntu Docker VM, its own Docker daemon, its own ports. Can you confirm that? Yes. Yeah, so it's a separate installation for now.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to solve
both. Yeah. So the question is, in Kitematic, can you connect to your existing Docker environment and existing Docker daemon? I don't know the answer to that. Does one of the Docker engineers know? Do you know if in Kitematic you can connect your existing Ubuntu Docker installation where you have all your images pre-cached and all that? No, I don't think so. That's a good... Yeah, I think we can wrap it. We can start doing Q&A. There's a bunch of these tutorials to explain how to provision a CoreOS cluster, use Docker Machine, use Swarm, install Kubernetes. It's all on my GitHub repository that I mentioned. And the slides that I showed you tonight, they're available on SlideShare/Chanaison. It's the first deck that you'll find in there. All the links are in there. So to get started, it's a good way where you have lots of explanation and in lots of details.
Thank you very much, Patrick and Jesse. Excellent presentation and very interesting demo. Thank you.